Hello, everyone. It's a different voice to start the podcast this week. So welcome to episode 497. We're almost there, Ken.
Almost there. Three away.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. I was going to say, just you and me in the studio today, Lucas. It must be Christmas time.
Yeah, it's the Ken and Lucas show today.
Well, we miss Randy and we miss Melanie. Melanie is taking some time with family who are in town. We're glad that she's able to do that. And then Randy is out today because his daughter is in the hospital right now. And so we want to be praying for he and his family. We're confident that doctors are going to have this taken care of. But I know that Randy and his family would definitely appreciate your prayers as well. So, Lucas, just you and me.
Yeah. Maybe they will like this new setup. And then Randy and Melanie don't have to come back. Who knows?
No, I feel quite confident they're going to want Melanie and Randy back right away. We're going to go ahead and do what we can do today so that there is a podcast out there. But Melanie, Randy, we can't wait for you to be back.
We are missing you already. So today we are talking about the gift of presence.
Indeed.
And our Christmas program was amazing. Before we start, I just want to say a huge thanks to the choir. It was a beautiful program. If you were there, you probably, saw snow at the end. And it was just amazing. Kudos to everyone involved.
And my daughter was watching online. She wrote back, "What? Where did the snow come from?" So that was really kind of a neat thing. I didn't know that they were going to do that until early last week when we were going through doing a walkthrough of the service, and they said, "And then at this point there will be snow." And I said, "What?"
Yeah.
So that was very cool though. That was pretty fun. And
was that Melanie's idea?
I'm not sure whose idea it was. I don't know for sure. Maybe it was Melanie's. It could have been a Belle or Albert. I'm not sure, but it was whoever's idea. Good idea. It was super fun. It really added to the to that experience. And I also want to kind of throw in some thank yous as well. First off, thank you to Melanie for all the logistical work, making that happen, coming up with the concept, coming up with the plan for that. Albert, our director of music, great job coordinating all the music, making sure that that happened. Belle, our technical director, who you just have no idea all the time it takes to get all. It's not just like hit a button to make things happen. You have an orchestra. They have to be mic'd. The choir has to be mic'd. I don't know how many different microphones are involved, but I'm going to guess there's a lot, like somewhere between 20 and 40 probably.
Oh, yeah.
And so you have to make sure the levels are all correct on all those. And then there's the lighting scheme. There is the snow. There's so much that goes into it. There's the making it possible to be online with our cameras. So great job to Abel and his team for all the work that went into that and making it just look and sound great. Really appreciate them. I want to thank Wycliffe, who is our choir director, did a phenomenal job getting our choir ready this week. And then also just a gigantic thank you to Richard Hickam and for all the work he did putting together the orchestra and just coordinating all of that together with the choir and just leading that. Richard's leadership, Richard for many years was our worship pastor here at Whole Life, and now he works for Advent Health, and we're just so grateful for him, his continued support of our church and involvement and just the great work he does there. So just a lot of people, and then all the members of the choir, all the members of the orchestra, all the tech team. I would suspect that there were probably, to make that program happen, it probably took somewhere between 75 and 100 people to make all of that happen. So great job. Thank you so much to every single person who was necessary to make that happen. We were really grateful. And, the reason we do it is because we want people to have an experience with Jesus. It's not about a concert or whatever. It is about putting people in a situation where they can really encounter Jesus in a special way and come and make that connection. And so we certainly hope that's what happened for you.
Yep.
If you were a part of it, you haven't watched the service, go back. It's online. You can watch it on YouTube. You could listen to it on Speaking of Grace. You can view it on our YouTube channel. Is it anywhere else, Lucas, besides YouTube?
They can watch on Facebook as well.
Okay. So and you probably just go to our website, wholelife.church, yep, as well, if you want to find it there. So it was just beautiful. The music was so wonderful, and it was just really fun for me to kind of see that hallelujah chorus right after the sermon. For me, nothing feels more like Christmas than Handel's Messiah. And pieces from that. When I was growing up in the small town in North Carolina that I grew up in, the First Baptist Church of Hendersonville, North Carolina, would put on a huge production of Handel's Messiah. And what kind of made it special was that they would, they didn't just do the music, they actually acted it out. So they had all the choir was all in costumes. So the singers were also acting at the same time, but they also had this like huge, I don't know how to describe it. It's like this big screen that when the light is on behind it, you can see what's happening. But when the light is off, you can't. So they would do these kind of like, this is like the old tech, right? This is, and so they would like do these kind of freeze frames of things from Jesus' life and the Bible that would be kind of frozen behind the choir. And so you just watch these different things happen. And it was, and so there couldn't have been very many Christmases that the Wetmore family missed going to First Baptist Church for that production. It was something that the whole community would really come out for. It was a big deal. And so for me, whenever I hear Handel's Messiah, it feels like Christmas to me, even though Handel's Messiah was actually originally written to be a production for Easter. That was originally what the intent was, but it somehow has kind of slipped over into Christmas, and it works just fine as far as I'm concerned.
Yep. And I want to say a huge thank you to our church family for showing up.
Yes.
Man, we had a full house.
We did. I think we had just shy of 1,200 people between two services. So I think at our first service, we were I think it was like 494 people there. And then I think at our second service, there were 685 or something like that.
Wow.
So thank you for coming out. And one of the fun things that we debuted this week that's actually going to continue on is that in rooms 101 and 108, we have worship cafes. And so during our second service, those rooms are open. There's tables in there. There's a good sound system inside those rooms, along with a big screen TV, and people can actually go in there, have a hot beverage, sit at a table, and partake of the service in kind of a less formal way. There's going to, as we kind of continue working on this project, there's going to be hosts in there. There may be a little bit more opportunity for discussion and some things like that. So it'll be kind of another kind of worship experience in addition to being inside the main worship center. So yeah, that's one of the things that will be happening every week going forward, but we kind of debuted it this week. Now, for those of you who've been a whole life, you're like, hey, we did that before. You did. You're right. That happened, I guess, before COVID, that was happening. And then after COVID, it stopped happening. So we brought it back. So we're really excited for that. And if you would have a passion, if you're one of the people that worships with us in person and you're like, hey, I've got some ideas how we can make those worship cafes really, really cool, come talk to me. Come talk to Melanie. If you're interested in hosting, if you're interested in kind of creating that experience, we'd love to have you help us make it everything that it can be.
Yeah. So, moving on to the message. I think this is probably one of my favorite messages of the year, just because I like this topic so much. And, you know, we're living in this world where we have all the tools and the resources to be, you know, as connected as, you know, never before, but still, what's going on, you know?
Yeah, that's such a real topic in my own personal life. I think sometimes it's easier to preach on the things that you are kind of wrestling around with yourself. And presence is one of those things for me that I'm my brain doesn't usually sit very still. So I'm usually thinking the next issue, the next problem that I need to solve. And so for me, oftentimes without the technology, even without the technology, I can find my mind wandering when I am with my family, with my kids, with my wife. I can find myself not completely tuned into them because I think, oh, I think I've heard this before or whatever. And I start thinking about something that's happening at work or something that's happening in my personal life. And I suddenly realize, you know, moments have gone by and I haven't really been present. And then technology has definitely added to that problem with the, you know, that little dopamine hit you feel when your phone buzzes in your pocket and you're like, ooh, I wonder if that's important or if it's just a non-important alert and I shouldn't look. And then you peek a look and you're like, oh, wait, it is. It's a text message from a coworker. I wonder if everything's okay. And before you know it, you're kind of sucked down that rabbit hole or even you're just playing games on your phone and sitting in the same room with people, but not really truly being present and connecting with them. So I think it's probably an issue that not just Ken struggles with, but a lot of us are kind of trying to wrestle through and what that means. And I think what I love about the Christmas story is just how present God is in it, that God really truly takes being present seriously. And as I talked about in the message, you know, from the very beginning, God has wanted to be present. And all throughout the Old Testament, we see God wanting to be present in his people's lives. And then when we get into the New Testament and specifically into the Gospels, we see Jesus being born and putting himself in a position where he is able to be present. That is one of the things that I think really shines through in the story of Jesus that we read in the Gospel pages is how present Jesus is, how he is with who he's with, that he is dialed in and really really seeking to connect and understand and be with whoever he's in dialogue with. In our modern times, I think one of the people that I really admire for that ability was Fred Rogers from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. If you ever dial into his story, if you ever kind of look, read up on him or watch documentaries, one of the things that I think was really significant about Mr. Rogers was that he was with who he was with. Mm-hmm. And he would say, there's nobody else in the world I'd rather be with right now. And he would just really put his full attention and energy into that moment. And I really admire and respect that. I don't, I'm not even close. I'm working on it. You know, part of it for me is starting to try to really intentionally leave my phone in my pocket or even sometimes if I know it's going to be too much of a temptation, leaving it in another room or leaving it back in the car so I can be fully dialed in and not be tempted to be somewhere else. And then also just in the moment when I'm with the people I care about and doing the things I need to be doing, just making sure that I'm really dialed into the conversation, that I'm thinking in that moment about that conversation and what's going on and the person I'm with. And I think like any other skill in life, it just is something you practice and you can be like, you can fail, but you know, it's just, you know, if you're Lucas, I know you're a big basketball fan. So, you know, it's like shooting free throws. You're going to, yeah, you know, to get good at it, you've just got to do reps. You just got to sit at the free throw line and hit it. And sometimes you're going to miss. Your percentage might not be 100%, but if you can get to 80 or 90, that's pretty great.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's like a muscle memory, you know. I feel that we are just so used to scrolling right now that when we're not doing that, it feels kind of weird.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. The other day I saw this ad. It's about this product called Brick. And what it does, you can only use social media when you tap your phone into the brick and then you leave the brick at your house. So when you're far from it, there's no way that you can access certain apps.
Okay.
And what I found very interesting about this is that we are creating technology now to not use the technology that we have.
Technology to save us from our technology.
Exactly. Yeah.
That is funny.
And it's so weird, you know. I was also watching this video the other day, you know, social media. It feels that the social part of it is just not there anymore.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, advertising, and they have this feed right now called For You. You know, it used to be, you know, a platform that you go to check on your friends, but right now they are suggesting what they think that you want to see. Yeah. And it's, I don't know where this is going to stop.
Well, you know, I think that one of the things that people have to understand, like everything else, this is a business. And so they, you know, they make their money from your eyeballs being on their product. Yep. And they make their money from the advertisers that pay for your information, that pay for you to be looking at their content. And you can be mad at them for that, or you can take personal responsibility for what you are able to control. And that's the part for me, like you said, it's always interesting when new technology comes out, because they're still figuring out how to monetize it and how to make it work. And so, yeah, a lot of the social medias are very different from when they began, but that all comes down to them trying to make money. And that's really what it is. And so, I don't know. For me, I have really found myself more and more disconnecting from social media. And I feel bad, because I do know I have family members that do enjoy seeing, you know, pictures of my family and seeing what's happening in our life and what's going on. But more and more is like when I get onto that social media, I find myself becoming really frustrated with the things that I read on people's feeds. You know, the things that get reposted, the things that just, you just like, why? I feel like if we were in the same living room together, you would not say that or bring that up. Maybe you would, but for some reason we feel really comfortable posting to the whole world things that are pretty destructive, honestly. And just watching the number of relationships that are just really incredibly hurt because people just feel like without their face behind it, they can just put whatever out. And this is, by the way, I'm not picking on one side or the other. It's whatever argument there is there's nasty people on both sides of it. And so I just don't know. I find myself getting on there and it just, yeah, I just don't enjoy it at all. So I've been staying away and not posting very much myself. But, you know, here at the church, thank you for you, Lucas. I send you videos and you post them for me, and it's taken care of.
Yeah, this is actually, you know, the thing that I was going to ask you right now. Because, you know, with all these bad things that social media, you know, can do, there is also, you can also use it to do good.
Yeah.
And how do you think, you know, a church or Christians should approach social media today in a way that they can use it as a tool to spread the good news?
Well, I think I think it's a little bit about thinking about what your post is going to do. Is it displaying love as defined in 1 Corinthians 13? Is it patient? Is it kind? Is it seeking its own? Is it not seeking its own? Is it destroying, or is it building up? And I know that there's a lot of ambiguity. What might be very important for somebody to think about that may not be their favorite thing to hear? There's that. But I think that one of the difficulties is the tone. It's very hard to hear tone in posts. So for me, I just feel like one of the things I'm trying, not at all perfect, so don't hear that, but I'm trying to think when I do post things, what's the worst tone somebody could hear it in?
Yeah.
What's, you know, if they can't hear my voice, what tone are they going to hear? And what is the tone that I want them to hear? And for me, the answer is I want to have the fruit of the Spirit in my life. I want that to be displayed. And I want to be a person that doesn't push people away, not only from myself, but from Jesus in general. And I think that sometimes, especially on the social medias, the things that Christians post are counterproductive to drawing in people who are on the margins or who are beyond the margins, who are just like, I don't want anything to do with Christianity. And then they read the post from a Christian, like, and this is why. And we can go ahead and say, oh, well, truth is truth. But I think that truth can be packaged in a way that's a lot easier to hear, or it can be packaged in a brutal, weaponized form. And so I think we have to think about those things a lot when we get onto our social media. I think the other thing I was just thinking about, Lucas, that is in the middle of this, so this is a half-baked thought because it's coming up right now, is I think one of the other difficult things, especially for me, is there is my personal life and there's my professional life. And on social media, it's very hard for me to have any separation whatsoever between Ken, the father, the son, the grandson. When I put a post up, it's not like it's, at least the way I currently have it. I know that there are people who have multiple accounts that, you know, there's some accounts that they keep very private and just for family. And that's probably something I ought to think about. But the way I currently have it is my account is my account. And I think for a lot of people, that's probably how it is. And it's very difficult to separate. Here's the stuff I'm trying to say professionally as a pastor, and here's the things that I'm just saying to my own family, and the things I want my family to see, and what I want them to know about what's going on in my life, and you know what I think about certain things. So I do think that that's also another little tricky aspect of the social media realm. You know, it used to be when you went visit your family for Christmas, whatever you said in the family living room was kind of there, you know, maybe your cousin or nephew or uncle or aunt or parents would go share what you'd said with somebody else. But I mean, it was a much smaller group. But now when you speak into these spaces, you're not just speaking to your mom or your dad, you're
exactly
speaking to the entire world, and everything that you're saying is something that somebody else reads, judges. And, you know, I think we've all had those bad days where we're in front of our family where we go off or we have a squabble, and later we come and patch it up. And these are the people that love us and know us. And they're like, yeah, you're just having a bad day. You have a bad day on the internet, it just lives there forever. And it's not just a bad day.
Yeah. I think in the past, social media used to enhance relationships, you know, like you're far from a cousin or, you know, a distant parent, someone in your family, and then you could catch up, you could see some pictures, videos. But right now it's just so busy that I think we make more progress on our relationships, like without it, no doubt.
Well, I think the people that you value the most, if the only way you're communicating with them is through email, text, and social media, that's probably a relationship that's going to really struggle. Sometimes that's the only option. I mean, I'm really grateful when I lived in New Zealand for a year back in the dark ages when the internet was just beginning to be a thing. You know, I would send an email to my parents almost every day. And it was a really amazing thing. That's how we could communicate. You know, obviously we couldn't be in person and phone calls were ridiculously expensive. And so it was a huge blessing to be able to send those emails and receive those emails on a daily basis. And yet that's not the way that I would want to have
a relationship.
Yeah. Unless it was necessary, you know, if you have to be in that situation, because that's just the way it is. But, It's just a good thing to be able. I'm looking forward next week. Be seeing my family. We'll be seeing Rochelle's family. Looking forward to hugging them, being in person with them, being able to have conversations and those sort of things. And yeah, so I do think that the gift of presence is a gift that in our society, I think there's been a period of time where we underestimate it, but I think people are beginning to really kind of come back to it and be like, okay, this was something new. We tried it. It's not particularly working the way that we thought it would work. How do we go ahead and adjust it to work the way we need it to work? And yet remember that there is no substitute for eye-to-eye contact, being able to give somebody a hug, being able to look them in the eyes, have those conversations in person. So yeah, the sermon for me was, I really enjoyed putting this one together. It was a fun one. It was a little fun play on words that Melanie and I chatted about, and you know, presence. Would you rather have presence or would you rather have presence? And yeah, for sure. Like the older I'm getting, the more I just want to spend time with my kids. I want to spend time with my wife. I want to connect with the people in my life that are my friends, that are my family members. These are the people I don't need. You know, I don't need another gadget. I don't need another one of those things as much as I really need your presence in my life and to have that. And, you know, like I think I said in the sermon, it was like, you know, I got a text message last week from somebody who said, hey, last minute, but you got time to go to lunch. And it just happened to be a day where I did have time, where there was nothing there. And I was able to go grab lunch with them. And it was awesome. Really enjoyed it and got to connect, be present, hang out. It was fun.
One of the things that I really liked about the sermon is when you talked about when you want to feel the presence of Jesus, a way that you can do that is doing good to other people. So, you know, you're in a drive-thru, you're paying for, you know, somebody that is behind you, or when you see a homeless person, you go there and you buy something. Can you talk more a little bit about what kind of things that we can do to start feeling more the presence of Jesus in such a busy way that we are living right now?
Well, I've always just felt like, Lucas, when you take care of other people, when you think about how to serve other people, those are the times where I feel the least lonely and where I feel like the world is a better place. And so for me, I base that particular part of the sermon off of Matthew 25, where Jesus said, you saw me when I was hungry and you fed me, when I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink, when I was naked, you clothed me, when I was a stranger, you took me into your house. These are Jesus' words. And then he says, when you did it for the least of these, you did it for me. And so I really do believe that when we see the least of these in our society, when we see the people that are in need, and maybe not even just the least of these, but even our friends, our loved ones, those who are craving human contact, when we go ahead and minister to other people's needs, I believe we're doing it for Jesus. And in that sense, we see Jesus, we smell Jesus, we hug Jesus. And I think that's a pretty special thing. As I mentioned in the sermon, or I think first service I mentioned, I don't think I mentioned it second service. Last week, iDignity, which is a really amazing nonprofit organization here in the Orlando area that helps people establish identification. I got to go do a tour of their facility and hear more about what they do. And what was, I think, the most profound parts of that tour was that they have an excellent executive director, great staff, enjoyed talking to them, really good information. But then they also had us talk with one of the people that they're serving. And then they showed us a video or two of other people that they've served. And I do think, and by the way, when I say it sounds like they serve, I want to say they're serving 20 or in their history over the last however many years, I think there's like 25 or 30,000 people in the Orlando area that have helped establish identification for. I think that they have, it's several thousand people, I think, are coming through on a maybe monthly or I can't remember. The numbers aren't sticking with me. But the point is they're helping a lot of people. And it's a real need. It was so surprising to me how many people are really struggle to be able to have identification. It's something I've just really kind of taken for granted in my life. I mean, I've lost my wallet or had it stolen or what we had passports at one point that were stolen. We've had all that happen, but it hasn't, I guess, because of how fortunate, blessed, privileged, whatever word you want to use for that, I am. It's just never been a problem to reestablish it, to go get that taken care of, get it cleared up and get it back. But for a lot of people, it's a really, really difficult thing to do. It's amazing. They told us how many people are born with birth certificates that don't have the name that they go by on. And so now you're really trying to establish who you are. There's just a million little things. The person that they had us talk to that was there in person had just gotten out of being incarcerated for, I think, 5 years, 5 or 7 years. And you would think, and this was the part that was just shocked me. I just thought, well, if you're incarcerated, they must have your identification. Yeah. You're incarcerated. You're in the system, right? No. For a lot of people who go into prison, into jail, their identification lapses while they're in there, or people destroy their documents while they're incarcerated, so they don't have them anymore. That, you know, the people who are angry at them or whatever, or their families move, or, you know, people that they knew or they become estranged from because of some of the things that they've done. And again, not making excuses for people who find themselves in that situation, but to come out of prison and not be able, your driver's license is lapsed. Mm-hmm. You don't have access anymore to your birth certificate. You don't have access to other means of identification. Now what do you do? It's already hard enough to get a job once you have been incarcerated. Now it's even harder because you have to be able to prove that you are legal, yeah, that you legally can work. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do that, it doesn't help people get out of incarceration. And so God bless iDignity for what they're doing and for helping people find their identification. And it was a project that began a number of years ago by, I think, three churches came together, saw an issue. They thought there were only 3,000 or 4,000 people in the area that would need that help. And they have discovered it is a huge number. And what I thought was really cool about them was that their number one priority is to maintain the integrity of the identification. So they're not just going in there and being like, well, here's an ID for you, here's an ID for you. They have attorneys, they have paralegals, they have a whole system, because they don't want somebody to get the wrong identity. That's a bad thing. So they really care about maintaining and preserving the integrity of the identification system and helping people do it the right way and get it done in the proper way. So I just thought that's a really cool thing. And I just bring that up because there's a million really cool nonprofits all over the place that maybe would be inspiring to you, that you'd be like, oh, for whatever reason, iDignity really spoke to me. That was one I was like, mm-hmm, oh, I can see myself being really interested in being a part of this on my personal time, because I really believe in that. And I would enjoy the interviews and helping people find things. I love doing that kind of research. So that would be interesting so that's one of the areas that I'm thinking about in my life. But there's so many other different things that we all have our passions for. And we think, oh, this would, and when you go and you start meeting these people by the way, the thing that kind of broke my heart too, is that, so this person that's sharing that they'd just gotten out of being incarcerated, they're living in their van with a couple family members. And here they are, it's Christmas time, and iDignity, all they do is help you get your identification. They'll refer you to other agencies who can help you with food and housing, but that's all they do, because that's good for them for knowing what they do and then just doing it well. But I looked at that family and I'm thinking, man, here's somebody who's just really being grateful that they're receiving help to get identification. They've got a plan for their life that they're wanting to make work. I mean, this person shared that, I mean, they have a plan for how they want to become gainfully employed and how they can get themselves out of living in a van.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I looked at that person and I really genuinely saw Jesus this week. I thought, wow, here's somebody that iDignity is serving Jesus. And there's just so many of those stories. And so the question for you, and I just love it, by the way, when people come up to me later on and say, oh, I heard what you said on Sabbath. And somebody came up to me, I think on Sunday I was in an event, and one of our church members came up and said, hey, I really thought about what you're saying about seeing Jesus in person. And you said to go buy some food for the person that's asking for food. And they said, I did that, but I also was just hit by the fact that I need to be not just handing them food, but be present. Yep. And talk to them and hear their story and make them feel seen and heard. And so kudos to that person. And I'm sure there's more than a few. Kudos for them for doing that, because I genuinely believe when you did it for them, you did it for Jesus. And that, I just can tell you, like, having those experiences is a blessing as much for you as it is for the person that you're being a blessing to.
Yeah. So let's go to question. We received a really honest question this week. Let me read it as it came in. This past week has been one of my loneliest weeks. I'm still getting used to living in a new state, and even with all the positive changes, I'm having a hard time making friends, even visiting Whole Life each week. What should I be doing during the week to feel God's presence and feel less lonely? Guess we talk about a little bit. And then she finishes saying, how can I find hope in this waiting season God has allowed me to be in?
Well, firstly, I just want to compliment you on your attitude. I think you sound like you're really seeking God in this, seeking to find the answers. You're recognizing that sometimes there are seasons of life where we go through feeling alone, and because maybe we are, being in a new state, going through those things, those are real. And so the first thing I'd like to say to all of us here at Whole Life is, I hope you heard what Lucas just read. There are people that walk into our church every week that are genuinely lonely. They are here. They're looking for somebody to connect with, get a meal with, hear them, sit with them, be with them. And I just hope that here at Whole Life, we all view that as part of our responsibility, not just the pastoral team or the staff, but that every single person who comes in here is looking for the person who's sitting by themselves, looking for the person who came in with their family, but maybe this is their first time being in this church, and having somebody reach out and say, hey, I don't know if I've met you before. And by the way, in a large church, that's, I think, one of the things that keeps us the most is, like, you just assume, well, I don't know 80% of the people that are here. So if I see this person,
why?
I don't know. Maybe they've been here for 20 years and I'm going to feel a little silly being like, hey, but just do what I do as a pastor and just say, hey, I may have met you before, but I'm slow with names, slow with faces. Tell me more. Tell me about yourself. Good to see you. Or, I don't know if I've met you before. Have we met before? That's a great way of introducing yourself. And I know that there's a number of you that are going to say, that makes me feel incredibly uncomfortable. I'm a shy person. That's not my natural comfort zone. And I hear you. And I would just also challenge you to push yourself a little bit. Because you never know when you're going to meet somebody that you're going to change their life, or they may wind up changing your life. And so I know I was actually... Rochelle is working for the Florida Conference as the Family Ministries Director, which means that she travels to a number of different churches. And this last Sabbath afternoon, she had a commitment at a church here in Orlando that was having an event that they'd asked her to do a little welcome or worship thought for. And what impressed me about that church was just how many people walked up to me and said, hey, I don't know if I've met you before, or how long have you been coming to church here? Or, hey, I'm glad you're here. Welcome. Is there, you need any help finding anything? And as somebody who, you know, didn't really know anybody there because it's not my church, it was kind of really impressive to see that. And so kudos to them for that. And that's what I hope Whole Life will be. I think, again, this was probably a little bit of a smaller church, and the event was a little bit of a smaller event. And so what I've found with smaller churches is that because they're smaller, they know who's who. And so it really stands out when they see somebody who isn't from there. At the same time, I do think that as large churches, we can also be very intentional about all taking on the responsibility of introducing ourselves to people, finding out where they're at, being present with them, and just making them feel like they're there. So now, back to the actual question that was asked, what can you do in this lonely season? I'm going to guess, because it seems to me like you're probably a very thoughtful person, that you probably have thought about everything that I would probably put out there, but I'll still say it just in case. The ways that I noticed that people move into relationships is by finding places to volunteer, whether that is going to a nonprofit like iDignity or Second Harvest or Mustard Seed, or anyway, there's so many. And if you need help finding something that you're interested in, our Justice Ministries pastor, Anderling Brady, would be happy to help you kind of identify the nonprofit that might be the best one for you to help volunteer at. So that's one thing. Also, volunteering here at Whole Life. If this is your church family, if you want to get close to your family, one of the things that you can do is to volunteer and to get involved and to get to know people through that. And again, Freud, myself, we can help you pair you with what interests you, whether that's helping out in our children's divisions, being a greeter at the door, helping out with the coffee service that happens. Yeah. There are our social committee. There's work to be done around the physical facility. If you're a handy person, there's a million different things that you can do to get involved and that will actually put you with other like-minded people. Joining a small community here at the church, being involved with one of the Sabbath schools, and just going up to people and saying, "Hey, can I spend some time with you?"
Yeah.
That's also something that you can do.
I was just going to say, if you go to wholelife.church/serve, you can find multiple volunteering opportunities. And yeah, just take advantage of that page that we have and get in touch.
So those are all things that, you know, that I can suggest to you that might work. But the other part of it is I would just say, come find one of our pastoral team and let's sit down and hear. I can give all the advice in the world over the podcast, and it may not hit at all for you because you're like, yeah, I've done all that stuff and it's just not working for me. But I'd love to, myself, Freud, Anderlene, Melanie, leaving off people, Aubrey, any one of our pastoral team would be very happy to sit down with you and have a longer conversation and just see how we can find ways to get you plugged in and get you feeling like you're connected in the community. And again, I'd love to say that we have 100% success rate. We don't. As much as I try to get everybody plugged in, I know that I have not always been able to make that happen. There have been people who've been here just like, hey, I'm trying to connect and it's just not happening for me. And for that, it's just one of those things that we keep working on because we genuinely want everybody to feel like they've got a home here and that they're cared about because that's a value for me. I want people to feel that. And so if all of us kind of view it as if we're out there trying to help connect others and help people find that, then good things start coming out of that. So, yeah.
Awesome. So what we have coming up next, this Saturday, we have our Christmas brunch.
Yes, we do. That's pretty exciting. And we're doing it in a new way this year. We're putting up two huge tents out on the it's the north parking lot. If you're not sure what that means, that's the one that's closer to Altamont Springs versus the one that's closer to downtown Orlando. And so we're going to put up two huge tents there. You'll bring your favorite brunch dish with you, and then get to hang out with awesome people. Yeah. So if you come to First Service, just on your way in, just drop off your food and they'll take care of it. And if you're coming to Second Service, make sure you show up, you know, a little bit before 10:45, maybe about 10:30-ish, and drop off your food and then just sit down and get to know. This will be another great opportunity to kind of mix. And don't wait for people to come to you. Go find somebody who looks like they're sitting alone and say, hey, I don't think I've met you before. You want to eat together and so enjoy that good food. And we want to thank our Brazilian community who has got some big plans for
I was gonna say
some good food. Yeah.
I may be biased because I come from Brazil, but my friends, you don't want to miss this.
I'm told Brazilians know how to do brunch.
They do.
So
Brazilian food is better.
Okay. Well, we'll get to find out this Sabbath whether or not your boasts will be. I have a feeling that they will be sustained.
Yeah.
So we'll look forward to that. So that's happening this Sabbath. My final sermon in the three-part Christmas series is Overflowing Gifts, the Gift of Praise. And we're going to be talking about all the places in the Christmas story that we see praise and how praise can make a difference in our lives today when we thank God for the things that he's done in our life. So that's also coming up. I also would be remiss if I did not mention that we have a candlelight communion and Christmas Eve service that we do. Lucas, do you know what time that starts at? I always...
Yes. So we're going to have a foot wash starting at 5, and then the candlelight communion starts at 6. It's from 6 to 7.
So if you would like to do the foot washing part of communion, which if you're not familiar with that particular practice within the Seventh-day Adventist Church, we practice what's known as foot washing. The ordinance of humility is what is the technical term for it. And this is where, if you remember, when Christ, right before the Last Supper happened, and the disciples had not lined up anybody to wash the feet of the people attending that Passover service that Jesus was at. And foot washing was a really big deal back then. You know, when you walk around in sandals, your feet are going to get pretty dirty. So, and when you would eat, you'd recline. So your feet were kind of a little bit more prominent than they would be at your Christmas dinner table, probably. And so it was a big deal to have clean feet, and it was a job that was the lowliest of lowly jobs. And Jesus went around and washed his disciples' feet when they forgot to find somebody to do it, and none of them were willing to do it. It was because they all felt like it was beneath them, and Christ did it. And so that's one of the reasons why we imitate that. It's something that we do to remind ourselves that we are to be living lives of service, that we need to humble ourselves and take on the things that aren't the most fun, because that's what Jesus did. So that happens, that foot washing happens between 5 and 6. Then at 6 o'clock, there will be a beautiful service with music, devotional thought, and communion, and we'll close off with battery-operated candles to make our insurance company happy. So that will be happening on Christmas Eve, 5 o'clock for foot washing, 6 o'clock for the service itself. Sadly, this will be the first Christmas that I will not be doing that here at Whole Life. But not sad in the sense that I'm going to be with my own family on that evening. But I will be back in time to preach that the next Sabbath after that, when we do the final Sabbath of our calendar year and kind of put a wrap on the year of overflow. And so we'll be putting a wrap on this year. And then after that, we'll be jumping right into our next year. And Lucas, we've got a theme song for next year. We have our special coins with our...
Yep.
With our new theme for 2026, which, by the way, 2026 is Whole Life's 100-year anniversary year, so we're excited about that. And so we have that. We have T-shirts that are on the way in, and I really like your design for the theme for this next year.
Awesome. Thank
you.
And
I won't say it right now, even though I probably said it other places, but we'll just leave that as a surprise. It's going to be a great year.
No spoilers. You have to be here. Yeah. January 3.
Yeah, there it is. So I think that's all the things that are coming up. So we hope that you're having a very good Christmas holiday season.
Thank you, everyone. We see you next week.
See you then.